Would everybody please rise and join me in the flag salute?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
May we have any changes to the agenda, please? May we have them read?
You have several changes to today's agenda. Under added presentation items, item A1D is adoption of a resolution honoring People's Self-Help Housing on its 35th anniversary. And item E is commending Sheriff Deputy Gregory W. Slane upon his retirement from the Sheriff Coroner's Office. Recommendation is for approval and instruct the chairperson to sign. Under closed session added items, you have under pending litigation, added item number 13, San Luis Obispo Coast Keepers versus County of San Luis Obispo et al. All requirements of the Brown Act have been satisfied as this notice was posted prior to the 72-hour noticing requirement. And under hearing items, item C1 is a hearing to consider an appeal by Jenny Kurtz of the Administrative Hearing Officer's approval of a request by Albert and Connie Malik for minor use permit, coastal development permit, to permit an existing approximately 14-by-30-foot swimming pool surrounded by an on-grade concrete pool deck with a small iron protective fence that totals approximately 1,260 feet. Located at 1565 Hollister Lane in the community of Los Osos. Recommendation is to affirm the decision of the Administrative Hearing Officer and conditionally approve the application. The staff report for this item needs to be amended to include the mitigated negative declaration and notice of determination, which is attached for your review, and that's the changes for today.
Thank you very much. With that, we will move on to the presentation calendar. Do we have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
May we have a roll call, please?
Mr. Shajian?
Aye.
Mr. Linthal?
Aye.
Mr. Ovid?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes. With that, I will read the first one. And who is here for Coastal Cleanup Day? Please come forward to the podium. Usually, I usually have a name here, but I didn't.
Miranda
have.
Leonard.
Thank you. This is a resolution recognizing California Coastal Cleanup Day. Whereas the state of California has a varied coastline of sandy beaches, rocky shores, productive estuaries, marshes, tidal flats, urban areas, and harbors, and whereas preserving the productivity and quality of coastal resources requires public awareness, support, and an understanding that protection of the coast is a responsibility shared by individual citizens, the business community, and public institutions, and whereas Californians are now adopting beaches year-round through the California Coastal Commission's Adopt a Beach program, now therefore be it resolved by the Board of Supervisors, we hereby proclaim September 17, 2005 as California Coastal Cleanup Day, and that individual citizens, businesses, groups, and public institutions are encouraged to observe this event and to participate in appropriate activities designed to promote a healthy and productive coastal environment for the benefit of the people of San Luis Obispo County and the nation. So would you come forward, please? And
thank you.
And your name again for the record, please.
Miranda Leonard, and I'm here on behalf of ECOSLO, the Environmental Center of San Luis Obispo County. This year's Coastal Cleanup Day will take place on Saturday, September 17th, and that's from 9 to noon. Coastal Cleanup Day is put on by the California Coastal Commission and the Ocean Conservancy. Actually, it's an international event. The event takes place every year, and it takes place in over 90 countries, all 50 states, every county in California, I think, for two or three. And what we're trying to do is make the connection between watersheds and our coast. It's estimated that about 80% of marine debris originates from inland sources. So we're trying to make this cleanup a very important part of the fall season. We're getting ready for the rain, and I'm sure we can all realize at this point in time how important it is to clean up our areas before the rains come. So this year's Coastal Cleanup Day is on Saturday, September 17th, and it's being put on in 24 beaches in our county, all the way from Piedras Blancas to Point Sal. Piedras Blancas, however, is a docent-only beach. The next beach is San Simeon. We have three beaches in San Simeon, all the way from Cayucas to Morro Bay, all the way down Pismo, Avila, Grover, Oceano, all the way down to Point Sal, where Bill Dineen's cleanup will actually be on Sunday the 18th. He's running a triathlon that day. So if you'd like a complete list of beach cleanup sites, you can check out our website, which is ecoslow.org. That's ecoslow.org. Or give us a call at ecoslow. It's 544-1777. And last year we had 1,300 volunteers. This year we're hoping for more. Last year we cleaned up about 15,000 pounds of trash and 3,000 pounds of recyclables from our county. We're hoping to reduce that this year, of course. And if anyone has any questions, please let me know. And again, it's this Saturday, September 17th from 9 to noon. Thank you so much.
And thank you very much. The next proclamation is Supervisor Linthal.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This proclamation declares the month of September as National Alcohol and Drug Addiction Recovery Month in San Luis Obispo County. So will the two representatives from Drug and Alcohol Services please come forward? It gives me great pleasure to read this resolution. It says, whereas alcoholism and drug dependency are chronic disorders with genetic, psychosocial, and environmental factors influencing their development and manifestations, whereas alcohol and drugs are the third leading cause of death in this nation, whereas this year's Recovery Month theme, Join the Voices for Recovery, Healing Lives, Families, and Communities, invites all of us to guide those in our community who need alcohol and drug treatment toward the promising path of recovery. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Board of Supervisors does hereby proclaim September 2005 as National Alcohol and Drug Addiction Recovery Month to demonstrate our continued support and commitment to alcohol and drug prevention treatment and recovery and to encourage individuals to participate in its activities. And I just wanted to add that I thank you because obviously some of you know my previous life. I've had a lot of contact with alcohol services and people that had drug and alcohol problems. And these are two individuals that represent a department that does a wonderful job that is often behind the scenes, and they don't get enough credit for the good things that they do.
We can all pause for you in a second. We don't have to rush. Why don't you stay here and turn around and let it take a good picture of you.
Don't get away.
Don't let them get away. We have to squish.
Yes. No, we don't. They got wide-angle lenses these things.
Harry's on a diet.
Paul Hyman, County Drug and Alcohol Services. Thank you very much for the proclamation. I'll just take one moment to say that I've been in this field a very long time, and I continue to be excited by the advances. We have so much science now that we didn't have when I started 30-plus years ago. We know about this disease as a brain disease, the dysregulation in the brain. We have such good science-based evidence, treatment, and we know that treatment works and recovery happens. And for anyone interested in more information about what we do and with links to other treatment, our website, slodas.org, you can get more information. And I'd like to introduce Elisa Legan, one of our prevention specialists, who will mention a couple activities for this month.
Paul mentioned, my name is Elisa Legan. I'm a prevention specialist with Drug and Alcohol Services, and it's my pleasure to do things that hopefully stop people from getting to the point where they need recovery. But as such, we do have people in our community who use our services, and we do see recovery happening all the time. We're thanked by many of our former clients who are now leading productive lives. And celebrating the 16th annual Recovery Happens Month, we'll have a film festival next Thursday, September 22nd, at the San Luis County Public Library. We'll be showing 28 Days and having a panel discussion following it, talking about how Hollywood portrays addiction and recovery, and we invite everybody to attend. We have an activity Thursday during WOW Week at Cal Poly, and we have other activities happening throughout our centers through the rest of September. On behalf of Drug and Alcohol Services, we thank you very much for your proclamation.
Thank you.
And thank you for all of the work that you do. Thank you. Supervisor Shajin, and would Dr. Thomas please come forward?
Madam Chair, it gives me quite an honor to read this resolution. It's a difficult one. It's for Dennis Reed, who is no longer with us. He passed away on August 22nd. Prior to reading this resolution, I would like to offer our deepest sympathy on behalf of the Board of Supervisors to his widow, Trish, to all of his friends and family members. So if you allow me, prior to reading this resolution, a moment of silence in his honor. Thank you. Whereas Dennis Reed commended his employment with the County of San Luis Obispo in the Information Technology Department on June 11, 2001, as a Data Automation Specialist 2 and was assigned to support the Health System Division of the Public Health Department. And whereas Dennis Reed passed away on August 22, 2005, and will be deeply missed not only by his family but also by his many friends and working associates in county government. Whereas Dennis shined his lightheartedness on all with whom he came into contact, he always had time for a happy smile and a cheerful hello. He had a quick wit, a loving spirit, and excellent interpersonal skills, which he used to develop and maintain outstanding working relationships both within and outside the public health department. Yet, when it came down to business, there was no one more thorough or committed than Dennis. His breadth of knowledge was vast, and his analyses were consistently well-researched and presented. He patiently taught many public health employees who struggled with computers. He was conscientious, dedicated, thorough, accurate, organized, innovative, knowledgeable, dependable, responsible, motivated, and hardworking. His personality consisted of an ideal blend of compassion, knowledge, generosity, kind-heartedness, and humor. With a dash of goofiness, his character achieved perfection and caused him to be loved by all. He will be forever deeply missed. Now, therefore, be it resolved and ordered by the Board of Supervisors that Dennis Reed is hereby commended and thanked posthumously for his dedicated and outstanding service to the County of San Luis Obispo and its citizens, and he will be profoundly missed by his wife, Trish Reed, his family, friends, and co-workers. Would you please come forward and accept this resolution? Do you want us? Okay, if I may ask my colleagues to come together in memory of Dennis and take a picture with his widow. Dr. Thomas, would you join us, please?
You can ask.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
On behalf of public health and Tricia, I thank you for this resolution. As you read the resolution, that was written by his co-workers, and he was just one of those special people that was dedicated to his family, dedicated to the mission of public health. When, as it said there, when you had issues with your computer, when it wasn't acting right, or you wanted to know what the capability was in terms of not only your desk computer, but what the capacity was in terms of responding to threats, he was there. That was his mission, and we'll certainly miss him. So thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments. The next resolution will be Supervisor Patterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm pleased to read a resolution
honoring People's Self-Help Housing on its 35th anniversary. Would a representative from People's Self-Help stand to the podium, and I'll read the resolution. Whereas People's Self-Help Housing was incorporated on August 6, 1970 to provide affordable housing and programs leading to self-sufficiency for low-income families, seniors, and other special needs groups on California's Central Coast, and whereas over the past 35 years, People's Self-Help Housing has assisted over 1,000 low-income families to build their first home throughout the counties of San Luis Obispo, Santa Barbara, and Ventura. And whereas People's Self-Help Housing has helped over 10,000 low-income clients in 35 communities in Santa Barbara, Ventura, and Santa Barbara counties, and has received numerous national, state, and local awards in recognition of significant contributions to the revitalization of our neighborhoods and communities. And whereas People's Self-Help Housing has developed and currently manages over 1,200 rental units throughout the counties of San Luis, Santa Barbara, and Ventura. And whereas all of People's Self-Help Housing programs and services have continuously improved the quality of life for thousands of Central Coast families and empowered them to become more self-sufficient. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the County of San Luis Obispo, Board of Supervisors, State of California, does hereby congratulate People's Self-Help Housing for 35 years of successfully providing affordable housing and providing community services to the citizens of San Luis Obispo County. Thank you. Jeanette, would you also like to say a word?
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You got to make the round.
I asked the two board members to come up with me, but we have a lot of staff here at the end. I'll ask them to stand up. Others are out either on the construction site or in the office manning the phones. But for people that don't remember what happened in 1970 when we were incorporated, it was really the County of San Luis Obispo Planning Director Ned Rugaway and Bob Keachley, who was the Chief Building Inspector, a lot of ministers here locally who were concerned at that time about living conditions that they saw a lot of low-income families having to deal with. And they talked to a young attorney who had just graduated from law school, Harry Wolpert. And Harry Wolpert filed the incorporation papers, and Dr. Dave Richardson, who had the Methodist Church up by Cal Poly, solicited his congregation, and 10 individual members of his church loaned us $100 apiece, and with $1,000, we optioned our first lot in Los Osos, and we built the first group of houses. So we've come a long way from that $1,000 purchase of not one lot, but we actually were able to buy seven lots for $1,000 to where we are today. And I think the success of the program is really illustrated by the number of families who've built and who've now gone on to start their own businesses, who have children that have graduated from law school, who have doctorates, and are really contributing members of the community. So the program works, and in our rental housing, we have the education component, and we work with the families so that they can go on, save money, and ultimately build their own home. So now we have rental housing and self-help homes in every city in the county, with the exception of Grover, and we've promised them we'll do some housing there. And we look forward to the future, to many years ahead. And we just received word when we were incorporated, Brian Lawler, who was a student, came up with our logo, which was two people building a house. And in 1977, 7 years later, Habitat took that logo. And for years, we've been unable to copyright it. And then finally, Habitat just changed their logo. So now we can officially say that what we created, people building their own homes or investing in their homes, belongs to us and San Luis County. So thank you very much. And this is the staff. At least we should have the ones who got here this morning stand.
Mr. Ovid?
Yeah, I saw this resolution, and there's two resolutions that are making me feel a little older than I was yesterday. And because the first project that was done in Paso Robles was right around in the mid-70s, and I was on the Planning Commission. And I was kidding with Jeanette because we argued with her about whether or not to allow single-car garage. And at the time, the only funding was the federal government. And not more than, what, a month ago, they just opened up their last housing project in San Miguel. And the difference in the type of housing, the projects themselves, are just amazing. But I think the same thing is held true from that day when we opened up the projects in Paso Robles to this one, is the feeling that the people have when they can move into their house, and it's their own house. And it's just amazing. And I think they've done an excellent job in 35 years. You've had to put up with me and Corky, you know. And we'll still get some of your staff to fly on small planes yet.
Okay, with that, thank you very much for all the work you all do. Mr. Ovid, you have the final resolution.
I'm going to ask Greg Selene to come up, and this is the other reason I got the feeling old, because he's retiring before I am. the only problem with this is, see, I knew his dad when he retired, and then I understood the other day that he's retiring again the second time. And then I kind of figured out, after looking at that whole aisle being taken up over there, this is the reason Greg's really retiring, is he's going to take care of the grandkids. And so he's got his next job, but at this point I would like to read the resolution commending Chief Deputy Greg Slane for his years and that he's benefited the public through law enforcement service. And whereas he began his career in 1975 in San Luis as a San Luis Obispo County Deputy Sheriff, and this is not an unusual thing that we see happen, but was laid off in August of 75 due to budget cutbacks and then rehired in 76 as a deputy assigned in North County. Since then, he is named Officer of the Year by the San Luis Obispo Elks Club. He was recognized by the JCs of California as the Outstanding Public Officer of San Luis Obispo County. And in 1989, he commanded and organized and reopened opening the first patrol station in Los Osos. In 1990, he was promoted to lieutenant and became division commander. Ah, see? Interrupted me. You can hear that one a mile away. And he's still smiling. Look at, get the can. He's got that smile on his face. Anyway, in that time he became division commander for civil and court security operations. In 93, he was promoted to captain and commander of operations. And later, the custody division. And in 95, he was promoted chief deputy, becoming responsible for Service Bureau, which oversees the operation of custody, civil, and administrative services. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Board of Supervisors does hereby commend Chief Deputy Greg W. Slane, which I got to get that in there because the old man will be after you if you don't, for his dedication to the safety of the citizens of San Luis Obispo County, and express our appreciation for his many years of service and wishes for his enjoyable retirement. And I'll be hounding him. So, Greg, you want? Yeah, Greg was worried I was going to tell all the stories. Oh, we got to
always say that one more time.
Wait a minute.
One more time.
Family really wants to make sure it's.
Eddie, as we come.
Yeah. Here she comes.
This will be the last time, so, up here.
What?
Thank you. I just want to thank everybody, especially the Board of Supervisors, for hiring me back in 76 after I got laid off. There was quite a turmoil in our family at that time. We didn't know whether I really wanted to come back to the county. I had another job with the state. It paid more. But this county, I grew up here,
and I wanted to serve the county and the community. It's been a great job. It's been a lot of fun. I tell you what, I've been at the beginning end of childbirth on patrol, investigated homicides, been shot at. I've done just about everything. It's been a great job.
As long as you can tell about it.
I met Harry in a bar. Can you believe that?
I told you we weren't going to tell stories.
I know. We've been family friends for a long time. And I think I have to really, I'm going to get emotional here, and I'm a cop and I don't do that stuff, but my family has been the number one supporter. A lot of missed holidays, a lot of calls at midnight in the night. A lot of times you get called out to respond to different crime scenes, to personal issues. But it was worth it. I've got a fantastic family, and I couldn't ask for anything more. And it's been a great, I say, 30 years of involvement with the community. And I appreciate it. Thanks, Harry, and the rest of the board members.
And thank you for all that you've done. Very much. Thank you. That concludes our presentation calendar. So with that, we will move on to public comment. I have one request to speak form for the... Which is first?
Yes.
Public comment. The first person to speak is Gary Steinbaugh, followed by Eric Greeney. And for those of you who, for those of you who have not been here before, you are allowed 3 minutes, and there's a timer on the podium. And when the light turns yellow, you have 1 minute left. And then when the light turns red, if you haven't concluded, I'll ask you to conclude. And I would remind everyone, I have quite a few public comment slips that it states here that public comment remarks should be directed to the chairman of the board as a whole and not to any individual thereof. No person will be permitted to make slanderous, profane, or personal remarks against any individual. I just wanted to remind everyone of that. So with that, Ms. Steinbaugh, please...
Good morning, members of the board, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Gary Steinbaugh. My address is 1440 Pismo in Los Osos. I'm here to obtain answers to questions that I've posed to the Los Osos Community Service District, county employees, Steve Monowitz of the California Coastal Commission, and Ms. Bianchi since the middle of July. I want to know why a change of zoning, use permits, and an occupancy change have not been required for the piece of property across the street from me. I live at the corner of 18th and Pismo in Los Osos. What happened to posting of property requesting a change? What happened to the required legal noticing of neighboring properties? What happened to hearings and public comment period? What happened to the taxpayers' and neighbors' concerns being addressed in use permit conditions? What happened to forgo permits for the change of occupancy of a residence at 1598 18th Street into a commercial office? The notice we received was on a Saturday, July 8th, and a 40-foot cargo container was dumped in the front yard of the house across the street. A letter a month later, dated August 10th, arrived from the CSD, and it informed us that the change to the property was already taking place with a duration of approximately 2 or more years. This was weeks after I had raised the question at a July CSD meeting. After 6 or 7 weeks of communication with the county, After 6 or 7 weeks of communication, the county and Steve Monowitz of the California Coastal Commission sent me a copy of the coastal development permit and stated that the commission and this county had decided that the changes were covered by that permit. I have read the county coastal development permit, and it's not covered. The seven-acre site I'm speaking about was not mentioned. Only a single generic paragraph mentioned construction staging sites. A construction staging site would lead one to think of a chain-link fence, a pile of sand, a backhoe, a stack of pipe, temporary in nature. We have all seen these temporary sites for utility construction, road maintenance. The construction of the sewer plant itself will, of course, include a construction staging site on that same property. What I'm talking about is acres of heavy equipment, cargo containers that are hooked together with wood roofs, pickups, travel trailers, water trucks, huge stacks of pipe, and the remodel of a residence into a busy office with people coming and going between 5:30 in the morning and 9 or 10 at night. The Menard Construction Company is from Montana but builds projects all over, I understand. Did no one require them to follow the established practice, or did the CSD fail to follow the rules in their behalf?
Ms. Steinbaugh, your time is up. Thank you for taking the time to come down. I have several requests to speak forms, probably on the same issue, and so I'm going to ask someone from planning to be prepared to respond at the end of public comment. If there isn't anyone here, maybe we could get someone. Thank you. Eric Greening, followed by Evan Mendelson.
Thank you. Good morning. I am Eric Greening. As those of you who are at the Council of Governments know, I've been very concerned that we not let the sufferings of the people of New Orleans be in vain, but that throughout the nation we profit from their experience by revisiting our own emergency response plans. I'm asking you to agendize such a revisit for this county with particular attention to scenarios demanding evacuation and to the needs of those without cars. Of most particular concern is a radiation release. The latest update of the Diablo Canyon draft evacuation time assessment estimates 11 to 13 hours for a complete evacuation. Who would keep the sea breeze turned off for that period? In New Orleans, an order to evacuate the city meant that those who could drive and who had the money to fill the tank and go somewhere left, and those without these resources ended up staying. They were literally an afterthought. For some, lack of automobile carried the death penalty. Having adopted the smart growth principles, which call for a diminishing reliance on the private car as a way to ameliorate congestion, pollution, and economically and environmentally unsustainable development, we should be planning for a future where fewer and fewer of our citizens have cars available. Such citizens should not be at risk of our lives as a result of our choices. But even today, there are many without cars who have no choice. They are stay-at-home members of one-car families, homebound elders, some of whom are physically incapable of mustering to a pickup point. And for those of us who are, do we know where to go? Some of them, even if someone stops at their home to assist them, and who would do so if a cloud of deadly radiation would arrive in 20 minutes, would refuse to leave unless they could take their beloved animals. How would this human reality be handled? There are latchkey children who've been firmly told not to answer the door for strangers, much less get in a vehicle with any. There are homeless people trying to stay out of sight to avoid destruction of their hidden campsites. If evacuation must be long-term or permanent, how are evacuees to rebuild their lives? Shockingly, evacuees from New Orleans have been called refugees. Will we expect long-term evacuees to live in refugee camps? Will the Department of Homeland Security be an aid or an obstacle to local efforts? Please, please, agendize a full re-examination with SLOCOG invited to discuss the potential of our transportation network to facilitate evacuation, mental health to discuss resources they would need to deal with the trauma, and the insights of whoever else might have a bearing on the subject. And while we're at it, let's look at tsunami evacuation of our coastal communities as well. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Evan Mendelson, followed by Glenn Goodman.
Hello, I'm Evan Mendelson, and thank you very much for letting me come to speak to you. I'm the Executive Director of Hotline of San Luis Obispo County, and I want to continue the discussion on the same subject, on emergency preparedness. One of the most critical failures of the Katrina disaster was the lack of communication and coordination among helping agencies. Yet, in comparison, one of the continuing and hidden successes is the Texas 211 system put into place by the governor immediately after 9/11 under the auspices of the State Emergency Services Office and using Homeland Security funds to fund it. In California, there is a state mandate for 211 access, but there are no funds for such services. Each county is expected to put together the funding and choose a provider for the service. By the end of 2005, over 50% of Californians will have easy-to-remember access to information about health and human services on ordinary days and in emergency situations. Hotline is a member of the Southern California Consortium of nonprofit programs that provide both telephone support for individuals in crisis, as well as information and referral through comprehensive databases of health and human service resources. All are nonprofits like Hotline, but only Hotline is staffed by volunteers. This saves San Luis Obispo County over $100,000 providing 24/7 service. And SLO County is one of the only counties with a sizable population that is not in the implementation stage of providing 211 access. At the Adult Services Policy Council last week, there was a lot of discussion about emergency preparedness, and the Sheriff's Department talked about how they're prepared, and Public Health talked about how they've been preparing, but all the nonprofits sitting around that table said, well, no one has involved us. And that coordination, I think, is the key. And really, in terms of what's happening now in the aftermath in Texas, it shows, just to give you the example, in Texas, you can, when the phones become overwhelmed, they can move those lines to another city. We could do the same thing. If there's a disaster in one place, you can move the lines, but the resources are available on the web, so they can still be used by anyone who's needing to help. In SLO County, we must be prepared. We must not be left behind. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments. Glenn Goodman, followed by John Fouché.
Good morning, Glenn Goodman of Hollister Lane in Los Osos, and I'm here to thank you. Thank you very much for a skateboard park in Los Osos. I caught wind of this project fairly early and managed to find one of the planning sessions that occurred, and I can't tell you how delightful it was to see your general services staff, the project manager, the architect that they had secured, all the kids that were obviously really interested in this project, and their parents working together, modeling with various medium and determining how this was going to come about. And last month, the park opened, and since then, I have spent numerous afternoons quietly sitting back and watching these knucklehead kids just going at it, and it is beautiful. And I just can't thank you enough for the support that you've provided in various ways. These kids are in the center of our community now. They're not in the back of anything. They're right in the middle where everyone can see what they're doing and support them by watching them, and you will not regret what you've done here. It's beautiful. Now, where can I sign up as a volunteer mentor so that we can possibly reduce the fee from $2 to $1 or to no dollars, because that would be my goal. I know these kids have a little bit of change, and I appreciate everyone who has volunteered and given money to help defer these costs. But in Los Osos, and maybe is this up to our CSD, or I'm not sure, but I would really like to see a more aggressive approach towards volunteer monitoring so that we can reduce those costs. But above all, thank you so much for your support of this project.
Thank you. It's always nice to hear nice comments. John Fouché, followed by Lisa Schicker.
Good morning, Board. My name's John Fouché. I'm sorry, my comments. I'll try to keep them nice as much as I can, but I do have an issue that I would like to discuss. An article from the Bay Breeze, and this is when Supervisor Bianchi announced her supervisor bid. Bianchi is a native of California and longtime Cambria resident, has spent the past 7 years on the County Planning Commission, and is the only candidate in the 2nd District who voted against the proposed $70 million County Los Osos Sewer Project. Quote, "This project is too expensive, uses old technology, and most residents don't want it," she said. "There's a cheaper solution that will solve the drainage, recharge, and nitrate problems. People shouldn't have to pay for an outdated system that is unaffordable, unsafe, and unhealthy." Bianchi offered an alternative solution to the sewer problem 7 years ago, a solution that she says is now being touted by local politicians and office seekers as the preferred alternative to the county's current unpopular proposal. I'd like to get back to that proposal that you were talking about, Supervisor Bianchi, 7 years ago. The people of Los Osos still want the cheaper and environmentally preferred solution to our drinking water problem. The current Los Osos board has failed to deliver as promised what they said they were going to do 6 years ago.
I don't mind your making personal comments. Okay. About something I said 7 years ago, but this is not the appropriate forum for a discussion of the Los Osos sewer. I'm sorry, but it really is not. The Los Osos Community Services District is a government entity unto itself, and we have no authority over what the Los Osos Community Services District does or does not do. So. If you want to continue, I will allow you an extra 30 seconds because I interrupted you.
Okay. I appreciate that. And I'll get away from the CSD and just say that as a member of the Technical Task Force of Los Osos, we have a plan to move the sewer plant out of town using a pond system and a pressurized collection system. The ponds resolve the sludge issue. Everything's contained within Los Osos. Ponds are much cheaper than the current project, $13 million versus $45 million. Ponds do not create nuisance odors. Ponds operation and maintenance is about $600,000 a year versus over $2.5 million a year as being proposed. They use 2 to 3 people to operate versus 11 people to operate the current proposed system. The collection system is about $35 million versus about $65 million the current system has. And we are proposing an ag exchange program with the farmers, and we're going to ask them to participate into that program. We think ag exchange is the answer, at least a big part of the answer to our problems out there. And we would also like to start producing and actually having a new well on the east side and stop drawing water from the west side, which is where our saltwater intrusion issues are. And to resolve that problem would be a matter of just producing, having production wells out in the east. We just want a common sense approach to our water problem. We know it's a water basin problem that we're trying to resolve, and we want to bring back a cheaper solution that makes just common sense. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next speaker is Lisa Schicker, and we would, if you wish to discuss Los Osos issues, that's fine. But once again, and I'm going to be really strict from now on, we will not discuss the sewer, the potential moving of the sewer plant. It is not within our purview, and public comment is for items that are within our purview. So with that, you have 3 minutes on Los Osos issues, followed by Julie Tacker.
Mrs. Bianchi and all the other supervisors, I heard what you said, but I must say the county is certainly involved with the sewer in many ways, and that is what I will speak about this morning. You are involved. The Board of Supervisors and the county staff is most certainly involved with the planning, design, and permitting of the sewer and the environmental review. You have been involved every step of the way, and I would like to say, I would like to talk about those things. It's strange to me to think that you are not involved. Currently, we had a speaker, a building inspector, who lives in a neighborhood about staging areas. You are permitting these staging areas in conjunction with the Coastal Commission. You are the ones who are responsible for allowing a home residence to be converted to a construction office. That is a county and a Coastal Commission permitting thing. I have also been trying to reach your staff by 10, 15, 20 emails, trying to ask them, where does your responsibility lie? You are the local permitting authority. You are the ones in 2003 that did not ask one question about the sewer plant when it came before you on appeal. You didn't ask one question. Why do you think that there are so many people opposed to this project? It started there with the county. With the county up going and not asking one question about the project, and it went on to appeal, and we've been fighting ever since, trying to be heard. This project is incomplete. The environmentally preferred project was adopted, and you adopted the EIR and adopted it as part of your conditions of approval. It is not being followed. That is why the county is involved. You can't say that you're not involved. In the meantime, I would really like to make a request to the supervisors, in all due honesty. We want to work with you. In 2 weeks, a change may occur. It may involve you. We aren't interested in giving the project back to the county, but we surely want to work with you. You are the land use authority. You are the local permitting agency. Everything we do in Los Osos comes back to you. We have to work together. And the tide in Los Osos is changing. That's all we're trying to tell you. We want a project. We don't want the highest per capita sewer project in the country. We don't want it on the upside of the bay where it's going to spill into the bay. There are plans that are being developed by competent people in Los Osos, and they want your ear. They want to hear you. They want to work with you. You've been accommodating this project for I don't know why, for the many reasons. I'm a CEQA professional. I'm an environmental professional. I've watched you turn your backs on laws and requirements and hearings numerous times, and I'm totally confused. You have a great staff, but in this case, I do not know why. They are not following the rules of CEQA, the rules of your own environmental regulations and your zoning regulations. They are turning their heads, and I'm asking you to please look into this.
And thank
That's
you.
That's what I'm asking you to do.
And thank you for your comments. Your time is up. Thank you. Julie Tacker, followed by David Dugan.
Good morning, Board. I am Julie Tacker from Los Osos, and the county actually does have some permitting authority over the Los Osos sewer, and that's why I came today, was to thank your staff. Thank your planning staff and your legal staff for recognizing that the sewer project may be stopped. They have required a performance agreement and bond of the Los Osos Community Services District with regard to the sewer project and its grading permit. Yesterday, our board met in a special meeting. All board members agreed with the concept of having this agreement with the county. I personally voted no because I did not agree with the timing of such an agreement, but we all agree that it is in the best interest of our community to set a bond. And today, our staff is undergoing the challenge to search for a bonding company that will cover our project, a project that is clouded in tremendous controversy by its environmental issues. It has litigation against it. There's a ballot initiative. There's a recall effort against the three majority board members who support this project. Again, I thank your staff and your legal counsel for recognizing the complexity of our project and its issues and requiring this bond of our community services district. Thank you.
David Dugan, and that's my last request to speak for him for public comment.
My name is Dave Dugan, resident of Pupiville, Los Bay Osos. Chairperson Bianchi and board members, today I would like to educate you on how to hinder and obstruct the election process. In preparation for my lesson, I use four tracking documents. The documents are part of a four-page file report called the Petition Statistics Report. Let's say you have five board members, A, B, C, D, and E, and C, D, and E are subjects of a recall. So you get the prerequisite number of petition signatures for the recall. Turn them in on, let's say, April 12th to election authority, who in this case is the county clerk. The clerk or designate counts the signatures to verify the number of signatures and files a signed unofficial receipt for the petition. Then on Wednesday, April 13th, someone starts the validation process for the board member C, but unexpectedly stops. Then on April 14th, someone starts the validation process for board members D and E, but unexpectedly stops. Then on Saturday, April 16th, or Sunday, April 17th, someone steals $440 from the county clerk's office. There seems to be a very dishonest person working in the county clerk's office, wouldn't you say? Now, not until Monday, well, not until Tuesday, April 26th, eight long working days later, or 2 weeks after the petitions are turned in, does the clerk of elections or designate count and sign an official receipt for the petitions. But wait, these official receipts are not signed. So who has possession of these documents of confidential material? Maybe it's the dishonest person in the county clerk's office that has possession of these confidential documents. Then on the same day, Tuesday, April 26th, the validation process starts again on board members C and D's petition signatures. Board member C is finished in three fast working days, Thursday, April 28th. But board member D is finished in six slow working days, Tuesday, May 3rd. But what about our board member E's signature validation? That's where the paper trail ends. Or did end. Since this morning, I now have copies of the PSR. There is no indication of when or if the signature validation for this board member E was ever done until I got this paper. For you see, the tracking documents from board member E's files have been missing since mid-May. Today, I've had to have copies made off the mainframe. To date, the original documents are still missing. Have these documents been destroyed or secreted away? Maybe the little thief in county clerk's office has those documents. But board member E's validation was finished on 4/29/05. May 3rd was when the recall could have been certified. You see, the recall could have been certified before the regularly scheduled meeting on May 5th. The election would have taken place 30 days or no earlier. That comes out to about $1 million a day, and it's much, much more than the $10,000 a day or the $11 million in fines we're being threatened with now. So ends our lessons for today. Tomorrow's lesson will be understanding your Miranda rights. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. That concludes the request to speak forms for public comment, and I see no one else coming forward, so I will close it to public comment. Is there anyone here from planning who...
David would like to speak.
Well...
Do you want to do the planning issue first?
Yeah. Matt, do you want to respond to this? Well, you weren't here, I don't think, at the very beginning. I don't remember seeing you.
Good morning, Madam Chair, Matt Jansen, planning staff. I did hear some of the initial comments regarding some of the specifics on the sewer, and I think it's appropriate that I start by saying that there's new litigation regarding the sewer, so even though the county's not named in the most recent lawsuit, I have to be a tad guarded with what I say. So I won't talk specifics about the particular issues that were brought up. I can say, however, that we are working with Coastal staff on almost a day-to-day basis on resolving issues regarding condition compliance with the sewer. The Coastal Commission approved a project that has 83 conditions, and many of those conditions name the county as an agency that they need to coordinate with when they decide if a condition has been met or not. It's their call, ultimately, and we are working with them on a daily basis on resolution of those issues. So we're their eyes and ears in the field, if you will, and we do have local permits that we've issued and will be issuing, and we'll be making sure that all the conditions on those permits are met.
Okay. Thank you very much for your comments. Mr. Edge.
Yeah, thanks, Madam Chair. I thought I'd address some of the important issues that Eric raised and... additional comments from a couple of nonprofit representatives in relation to disaster planning and the tragedies that we're seeing unfold out of New Orleans and the related area in the aftermath of Katrina. And of course, as your board knows, and perhaps some members of the public don't, in addition to being the county administrator, I'm also the emergency services director for the county. And oversee the planning activities that we perform in relation to disasters and disaster response and preparation. I think it's too early for us in the profession to talk about what may have gone right, what may have gone wrong in the response in the Gulf area to Katrina. One of the key pieces of the emergency management business is a standard post-event critique that's undertaken within the area. This is standard operating procedure, and it really is a critically important piece of the process, because this is an environment in which continuous improvement is the name of the game. I do feel, without trying to come down on either side of the current political debate about whose fault it is, I do think that one of the drawbacks of the current media frenzy is that the Katrina issue and the response from the area may become a political football in which Democrats on one side, Republicans on the other side, are busy finger-pointing and denying the finger-pointing. When it becomes that much of a political issue, it is sometimes very difficult for the professionals to have an open critique, because the possibility of critique is drowned out by the political media noise that comes after. That being said, it is, as I said, it's too early to say here's what went wrong, if indeed anything did go wrong. Disasters by their nature are exactly that. If we could handle disasters as we handle day-to-day business, they wouldn't be disasters. It's kind of a duh sort of comment, but it's the reality. We kick the disaster planning and disaster plans into gear when we have said on a local level, this event, whatever this event may be, is beyond the capacity of our regular emergency systems to handle. In other words, our highly trained police and fire and ambulance responders are overwhelmed by this particular disaster, whatever it may be, and therefore we need to kick into gear a higher level of response. Pluses and minuses of having a nuclear plant located in our area are debated endlessly, and again, I'll try and sidestep the political preferences. From an emergency services viewpoint, we have to deal with what we have as opposed to what people may or may like to have, and we deal with the fact that there is a nuclear plant here, and how do we handle the responses to events that may unfold. Now, the benefit that we receive as an agency from having a nuclear plant sited here is that we get significant funding from the federal government through the state to have a higher level of professional emergency planning, as you know, operating out of my office, than a county our size would ordinarily have. We have four full-time emergency services coordinators in San Luis Obispo County, which is probably double the number that a county our size would ordinarily have throughout the state, and that's specifically because of the funding that we receive to plan a response and recovery to an incident at Diablo Canyon. The benefit that we receive from that is that we have and are able to work continuously on generic disaster plans. We've recently completed a draft of a specific tsunami plan. Eric had asked, I think a member of the public, not Eric, excuse me, had asked about tsunami planning. Tracy Vardis, one of our emergency services coordinators, recently completed a draft of that plan, and it's going through the critiquing process right now. There's no perfect response. Are you prepared enough for a disaster? The answer in our business of emergency services is no, we're not. You're never prepared enough. You are prepared. You continuously work at fine-tuning the preparation. As your board is well aware, we have regular drills, full-scale drills, in this county focusing on nuclear incidents at the Diablo Canyon plant, but also addressing general emergencies, earthquakes, obviously a significant issue, tsunami possibilities, and fires that we've had in the not-too-distant past. We continuously work on those. We run the plan. We see how the plan works, and we critique afterwards the response and make changes based on that response. In terms of specific issues post Katrina, I've asked my guys to take a look particularly at the communication and mass transportation elements of our plans, and we're in the process of doing that right now. Eric's point's well taken. How do you handle those people that don't have their own transportation? We've been very aware of that. We're fortunate in being a smaller population base than the greater New Orleans area. We are able, because of that, to do some things that an organization that size or a population that size couldn't do. We have a self-reporting system for people with special needs, as an example. And that's updated on an individual basis. We have 350 individuals that are special needs individuals. These are people living on their own who have indicated that they would need particular attention in the event of an evacuation or a disaster response. And we have plans to address each of those 350 individuals as individuals. Who's going to respond to that? Well, that's what emergency services folk do in the event of a disaster, in addition to being there to oversee and coordinate an evacuation if that ever happens. The same folk, our police and firefighters, are in a position, and the plan calls for them, whilst undertaking that business, to swing by these particular addresses that we have on file to take care of those designated individuals. So that's the special needs group. In addition to that, I did ask about the numbers of buses we have available for mass transportation. We have plans for using them. And we have 180 commercial buses and 170 school buses available in the county. What that translates out to is the ability, if necessary, to transport at any given time at least 17,000 individuals in mass transport. This is on a very quickly available basis, obviously, and I think as your board is aware, the concept of mutual aid in disasters is such that we can pull additional resources from neighboring counties and gradually spreading out in waves further and further away up to and including national responses through FEMA. But on a local level, we have the 180 buses. Buses that are immediately available within the county through Slaughter and other transportation. 170 school buses designated for children, obviously, during the term time, but available for our use, and we have plans to use those outside of term time, when it's school vacation period. So 17,000 approximately is the rated number of passengers for those buses. In the event of an emergency, we are certainly free and legally able to exceed the rated number, and so we could easily evacuate with that number of buses up to 20,000 individuals at any given time. I need to stress, and it's important, seeing some of the criticism coming down, there's going to be a lot of second-guessing, and rightfully so, whether FEMA's response was adequate or not, whether the local response was adequate or not from both the city of New Orleans and the state of Louisiana, particularly with Mississippi and Alabama and Florida secondarily, remains to be seen. It is important to recognize that FEMA is a secondary responder to any emergency, and it's not an initial responder. And in any reality that we plan for, our assumption is that in a major emergency, we're on our own for 72 hours. We stress that to members of the public when we talk about earthquake planning, earthquake supplies, store, canned food and water, bottled water, and have a radio available, a transistor radio with batteries, flashlights with spare batteries, candles and so forth, because you should plan on needing to take care of yourself potentially for 72 hours. It's what we operate on. At the local level, we have our plans. We plan on a local level to be running an emergency for that first 72 hours before the massive resources that FEMA can bring to bear are in a position to come and back up the local needs. I think, as some of you know, I had the misfortune, perhaps is the best word, to be in a similar position with San Benito County when Loma Prieta hit, and San Benito County, up south of San Jose, was the hardest hit county. We were fortunate in having no deaths, and so we got less publicity, perhaps, than some of the tragedies in the Bay Area. But we're the hardest hit county, and for about a week, we were having to run with very small local resources. We were having to run a major earthquake response. It wasn't because FEMA was inept. It was because it takes that long for an organization like FEMA to crank up the kind of resources it brings in. So I've taken too long already, but I thought it was important because this clearly is a major national issue right now, which rolls down to people very rightfully concerned about what are we doing at the level of the county of San Luis Obispo. We can never be well-planned enough. Planning is a constant and ongoing process. As I said, we're fortunate in this county to have four full-time professionals who focus on that, on the communication, the coordination, so that in the event that a disaster does hit, we have a standard operating procedure with built-in redundancies that allows us to respond as effectively as possible. It doesn't prevent the tragedies from happening, nor can it prevent the tragedies from happening. What it simply says is that the governmental organizations that are in place in our society have plans in place to respond, and if we are doing our planning well, those responses, eventually leading to the recovery phase, will be as effective as they can be in those circumstances, and that's our goal. And thank you for the time and diligence.
Well, thank you very much. I had you down to respond to that. Supervisor Patterson wants to say something, but before he does, I'd like to respond to the statement from the representatives from Los Osos. Depending on the results of the recall, I have always been available to work with any other government entity, any other community services district, CSA, whatever, and would continue with that policy. That's not a problem. Supervisor Patterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was wondering if Mr. Edge could briefly respond to Ms. Mendelson's comment about 211 being implemented in San Luis Obispo County. As I understand it, it's on its way.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the status is. I know that work is underway. I think as the speaker referenced, the issue is who's going to fund the bottom line on this. And your board gives some money to Hotline already. We don't have the details on the level of funding that would be necessary. I don't think the county is the lead agency, as it were, on the effort, but we are working with those who are interested in having it be implemented. We can get back to you with more details. I don't have them off the top of my head. Sorry.
I glanced into the back of the room and remembered something else that someone had brought up. Working with the community of Los Osos for the skate park, and probably your best person to contact would be Jan DeLeo from our General Services Department. And she would be able to help you, at least if she doesn't have the answer, she would be able to direct you to the person who would have the answer. With that, our public comment period is closed, and I thank everybody for coming down and for being here. But we will now move on to the consent agenda. I have one request to speak form. Eric Greeny.
Thank you. I am Eric Greening on B14 and B25. B25 includes submittal and board and staff letters reacting to the Bureau of Reclamation's ocean disposal alternative for polluted selenium-tainted agricultural tailwater. I support submission of these excellent letters and hope we are prepared further to challenge any attempt by the Bureau to move forward with a final EIS that includes this irresponsible alternative. The ocean is not a dump. I believe we would be on firm ground in making such a challenge. The draft EIS conveyed so little information on this alternative that only a revised draft with an accurate project description would be legally adequate prior to gathering public comment for a final. The route of the 42-inch pipeline is utterly vague, and the path of pollutants up the ocean food chain is untraced. Our county knows better. Our first draft EIR on the Nacimiento project was precise about the pipeline alignment, and when this proved controversial, a revised draft with a revised alignment was prepared. Comments taken on the revised project before the final document responded to them. First choice, Bureau of Reclamation drop the ocean disposal alternative. Second choice, a revised draft EIS that actually describes the alternative and its impact. Not a choice, a final EIS now with the alternative. And I hope our legal people and all our departments can work together with whatever other agencies are out there, the Marine Sanctuary and whoever and whatever else, to challenge this if it comes up. On B14, I'd like to thank you for your support of the Living History Day at the Dana Adobe. It's a great place and a great organization, and as a participant, I found it both educational and fun. I might mention that a similar event is happening north of the grade on October 2nd at our own Rios Caledonia Adobe in San Miguel, complete with early California music and dance. Hope to see you there.
Thank you. I now have another request to speak form for consent. Turco Semis.
Thank you, Board. My name is Turco Semis. I'm here to represent San Luis Obispo Green Build and to thank you, Board, for supporting us with discretionary funds to help us get this started and get it out to the public. I want to give you a little update of what we're doing and who we're working with. To this point, we have also worked with the City of Rio Grande, who has funded us and signed an MOU to support our efforts in promoting green building practices. We also have MOUs with Habitat for Humanity, the League of Women Voters, and the American Institute of Architects. In a brief overview, we're a group that formed about a year ago who are now, you're going to be seeing and hearing a lot more from, thanks to your help financially and your support, and the support of some of your staff who have come to our meetings. We're a group of building professionals, concerned citizens, who would like to see healthier, more energy efficient, and resource-friendly homes and remodeling construction. To do this, we're looking at three different focuses. One is to do training and outreach with both the homeowners and the public, and the other is to do training, more technical training, with building professionals on what's available and what some of the latest green building practices are. We also would like to team up with municipalities, yourself and other cities, to provide copies of our green building guidelines and checklists and other informational packages we have on what's available and what some of the practices are. We'd like to do that specifically with your group, but through a kiosk in your planning department, which was what part of the funding was to do. And the other part of our three-point of working is to help develop policy with municipalities on green building and sustainable building practices. So once again, thank you very much for the funding, and we look forward to working with you in the future. Thank you.
And thank you for your comments. That's my last request to speak form for the consent agenda, and I see no one else coming forward. Mr. Ovitt, do you have...
No,
any, Mr. Patterson?
Just a comment on B-17, Madam Chair.
Okay. Mr. Lenthal?
No, ma'am.
Mr. Shajan?
No, thank you.
And I have none, so Mr. Patterson?
Yes, I just wanted to quickly comment on Mr. Sims' comments regarding San Luis Obispo Greenbelt. It is a volunteer effort by individuals in a variety of professions related to building sustainable homes and sustainable buildings in San Luis Obispo County. They've worked extremely hard over the past year, and I think that the work they're doing will lead to better housing, more energy efficient and sustainable homes and buildings in San Luis Obispo County. in the future. I've been quite impressed with the work they've done in the past year. Again, it's all done by volunteers, and I want to thank members of our San Luis Obispo County's planning and building staff who have volunteered their time to work with this organization. Thank you.
With that, I move approval of the consent agenda items.
Second.
How about we have a roll call, please?
Mr. Shajian?
Aye.
Mr. Linthal?
Aye.
Mr. Ovitt?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes. With that, we are, and I apologize to everyone who's been sitting here, we're going to take a 15-minute break and return at 10:30. Thank you.